Did you know the FBI believes there are as many as 25 serial killers active at any given time? However, the Murder Accountability Project believes that number to be closer to 2,000. Welcome. I'm Jay.
I'm T.
We are Fatal Blend.
This is where we talk about two things we absolutely love. A little bit of coffee and a lot of true crime. Specifically, serial killers.
So let's get into it. What are you drinking today?
Oh, today I'm drinking, you'll start to see a theme here. I really like iced coffee drinks. Or like iced lattes, Americanos, mochas, you know. So I am drinking an iced Americano today with some sugar-free almond and some half and half. That is one of my biggest go-to drinks. And for all of you wondering, I do make it at home because I do have a stellar espresso machine in my kitchen that is commercial grade that I use for myself.
It is something that's very nice. So I'm drinking, and I'm pretty basic, but this is my go-to. I'm drinking a iced Americano with sugar-free French vanilla and some cream.
Again, made by me in the kitchen because I used to be a barista.
Absolutely. We went from having coffee every day. We needed it in the house, so we decided to set it up and continue our trend of making our own coffee.
We did. I mean, we obviously sometimes go to our places, you know, but I'm a stellar barista. That's it.
All right. Let's talk about what's happening in the news today.
All right. So there is, again, a lot of the times we're going to focus on Washington stuff because that's the more local stuff that we're getting. Obviously, if there's something crazy in the national news, we'll talk about it, but we're not. So not too long ago, a little boy went missing up in Everett, Washington. He had disappeared. And they just recently found his body, which is devastating. But the part of it that is really gross is that they've actually arrested his mother. In his disappearance, they have charged her, or I guess she's not charged yet. She's charged with making a false police report, but she is arrested on suspicion of first degree murder, second degree murder, and first degree assault on a child. She was staying at a friend's house, and her son was with her, and she had claimed that he fell out of the bed and hit his head. And so that's what she actually told the police when they first started looking for him. The friend went back to the house and found a significant amount of blood in the room that they were staying in, and both of them were gone. So that was a little suspicious. And then they couldn't find her. And so that's even more suspicious. And then they ended up finding her actually in Ridgefield, Washington, which is almost near the border between Washington and Oregon. So Everett is like the northern part of Washington, and they found her in the southern part of Washington. Not suspicious at all. And during that time, she had actually said to the police that she went to a hospital in Everett with her son after he fell, but they were just taking way too long. So she just dropped him off with one of her friends and headed to Ridgefield instead.
Yeah, that doesn't sound suspicious at all.
No. And then, of course, when they find her, they actually saw that she looks like she has splatters of blood on her shoes and her shirt. So she was arrested. And they are doing more research. But then they also had found out that her mom had actually applied or filed for a petition for emergency temporary guardianship. Like a couple of days before, the little boy went missing, and her reasoning was because her daughter was struggling with alcohol and drugs, and she couldn't trust that she would take care of the boy. She actually has two boys, the boys. And so, yeah, that's kind of a big sign. So anyways, that's pretty much all they have on that right now. So as we find out more information, of course, we'll update you on anything new that's coming along.
But like, look, if you don't want to be a parent, don't be a parent. There's other options out there. They might not be the best, but it's better than what we just read.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not dedicating yourself to your kids, and helping them become, you know, strong, willful adults, then, you know, you got to look at other options, especially if there's parents or grandparents that are willing to help out. Like, it doesn't do the kid any favor. They don't have any choices.
Well, and I understand drugs and alcohol could play a role in this. However, I'm not a fan of excuses, and I will never be a fan of excuses. So using your drug addiction as an excuse for potentially harming your child or murdering your child is a bullshit excuse and always will be. Drug addiction is a real addiction. It is a real problem, but it is not an excuse to harm somebody else, especially your children. So that is that.
All right. And that's what's happening in the news around us. So let's go ahead and get into this next episode here. The episode we're going to focus on today is Glenn Edward Rogers.
Okay. Mr. Glenn Rogers. So Glenn Rogers is actually nicknamed the cross-country killer, or better, he's known as the Casanova killer. He has been accused, or whatever, is known for killing five or more people, because again, it seems like with every single killer, serial killer, once they're captured, they all of a sudden start copping to a bunch more murders that either do or do not exist. And so, you know, you got the five or more. He was also, his characteristic reasoning for the killing, or the characteristics of his killings, were robbery and rape. At the time that he was committing his crimes, he was 6 foot. He had long, like, dirty blonde hair. He had a very fit physique. And I can understand how back in the day, he might have been considered attractive to women. I am not a fan of long hair, but I can see he's kind of got that, like, alternative grungy look to him. And he was also a charmer, like, when he talked.
Oh, yeah. It was the typical 80s look with that blonde hair, kind of that beard going on a little bit. This mm-hmm. is definitely what the women were looking for in that 80s man, you know, tank top, chest hair hanging out. Oof, it was a look.
Thank God I was a baby in the 80s. Thank goodness. Anyway, so let's get into a little bit of who he was. So he was born July 15th, 1962. He was the sixth child of seven children. And he grew up in Hamilton, Ohio. His parents were garbage people, not actual garbage people, but like piece of shit garbage people. His father would regularly abuse all seven of the children. Nobody was safe from it. So he was a dick. His mom, on the other hand, was probably the worser of the two parents. She would regularly abuse the children as well, but her abuse, like the father's abuse was hitting, punching, you know, type of
physical things. Abuse.
Physical. Well, the mom was physical too, but she had some of her things I feel like were physical, but also were a crazy, like purposely done as a mind fuck because they were young. So for instance, one of the times when he was a toddler, so they were, you know, like around 2 years old, his mom slapped him so hard that he actually was unable to breathe and passed out. And if that doesn't shock you, how about the fact that when he was 3 years old, the mom didn't want to have to worry about him, I guess. And so she created this like contraption that had restraints all over it that she would put him in, and he would have to sit there like strapped in to something so that he couldn't move. And when he was 3 years old, he taught himself how to escape the straps, and then he would like free himself, and then he would run into the rooms and he would eat paint off the walls. And again, let's not forget that he was literally smacked so hard as a child that he stopped breathing. I would say he could have brain damage. Maybe that's why he ate paint off the walls. I don't know. But she even went a little bit farther, and she would pretty regularly hold his head under the water during bath times until he either passed out or until he was so close to passing out she didn't know if he was actually going to pass out or not. So she'd like bring him up. That's like torture.
Yeah, that's like oxygen. Yeah, it's oxygen deprivation to your brain.
Right. And he's like 3 and 4 years old when this is happening.
You know, the main time where your brain's supposed to develop.
Right. During those milestones that you should be, you know, so happy that your children are doing, she's basically trying to murder her children. I would say that due to his massive amount of abuse at such a young age, he actually did wet the bed until he was 12 years old. Which is not anything I'm not poking fun. That is actually one of the signs of abuse, is when you wet the bed and you're older than the typical bedwetting age. So 12, that's the turning point for him. He began to heavily use drugs, and he began to burglarize homes with his older brother. And he was 12. So due to the criminal behavior of him and his brother, they did definitely, burglarized a lot of homes, and again, used a lot of drugs. They got caught, and so he was actually sent to a reform school because of his criminal behavior, which my personal opinion of reform schools are they are a crack of shit. They don't really do anything. So my view is it just fucked him up more. When he was 13 years old, he did attempt suicide. His reasoning for it was he had found pictures of his mom, not so good pictures of his mom. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. It was like that was enough. And so he took 25 Motrin, like Advil, like ibuprofen, and tried to kill himself. Listen.
I mean,
I don't know.
He probably just grabbed whatever he had.
I agree. He was very upset.
Yeah.
Fair. He's had a pretty terrible life up to this point. And then he just kind of, again, got kicked out of school a lot. Didn't have good grades. Actually, I think he always had Fs. I don't think he ever got anything more than an F, which actually led to him getting expelled from school. He had been expelled from school, high school, in ninth grade. Part of his expulsion was because he was not actively trying to be in school. He was just not showing up, or when he did, he didn't do anything. He refused, just didn't want to be there. So they expelled him. When he was 17 years old, his dad had a stroke that was pretty like debilitating. So his dad couldn't work, and he ended up taking care of his dad because his mom would not take care of his dad, because she would go out to the bars to try to find companionship. Now, again, let's not forget that his dad is the one that regularly abused him, but not as mean, I feel, as his mom. So I think that's maybe part. Again, abusive children tend to like try to do things to please their parents, because, you know, from my point, it's like you sit there and go, why would you even care to take care of your dad? But it's still his dad at the end of the day. So at one point, took his dad out. Like took his dad, put him in the car, and drove him to a local bar where his mom was to show him what his mom was doing and to say, like, look at what she's doing to you, because the dad didn't believe that this stuff was going on. And then on another occasion, he actually followed his mom to a bar and took a bat and beat the shit out of the man that she was with. So, and I think he actually beat his mom with the bat, but not as bad.
He was an angry person.
I mean, I guess. So then when he turned 18, that's in 1980, he got married to Deborah Nix. Yeah, they were only married for 2 years. They got divorced in 1982 because he was a mean person. And once they got together, of course, he was a charmer before that. So he was not nice. And she was going out and he was, kept thinking that she was cheating on him. And so he followed her one night and found out that she had been meeting up with a guy at a bar. So he waited till she came home. He followed her home and then he beat the holy shit out of her to the point where she almost died. She had to have multiple surgeries. I wasn't going to say this, but he violently kicked her multiple times in the female genitalia part to where she had to have multiple surgeries to try to fix it.
That is a lot of rage in somebody.
Yeah. So anyway, she thought, wow, you suck. Let's get divorced. So she filed divorce after that. She was like, nah. And then he, one other weird thing about him, one of the other big things about him before he actually started murdering people, because again, he didn't actually murder anybody until he was 31. So that's also weird to me, but whatever.
Yeah, especially with all the rage that he was carrying around.
Yeah, well, I mean, that we know of.
But he was also in and out of jail, so probably some of the gaps for that.
True. When he was 24, he actually got brought into the ER because he injected himself with Budweiser into his veins. And while he was in there, they did a psych evaluation and all kinds of stuff. And he did admit to also being a super heavy drug user. So again, he, I think in the first like part of his life, he was just trying to cope with living. So he was a super big drug addict. And
well, the drugs took him away from everything that was happening at home with his parents.
Took him away from reality.
With his life, you know.
Yep.
Put him in that state of mind where he didn't have to care.
In 1993 is when he, the first reported murder of his. He was 31 years old. The victim is a man by the name of Mark Peters. And unfortunately, Mark Peters was 71 years old. And he was actually kind of like a roommate to Glenn. Glenn had stayed with him off and on. And so they just consider him a roommate. But this guy had actually opened his home to Glenn a couple of different times. Anytime that he needed a place to stay, this is where he would go. Mark went missing and nobody could find him for about 4 months. During that time, Glenn also went missing, which was a little weird because it was like, what? Huh, they're roommates and they're both gone. That's weird. And then Glenn's brother, his name's Clay. Clay, actually, they owned a cabin, and Clay had gone out to the cabin and he found some skeletal remains in this cabin. So he called the cops, brought them out there, and they found a skeleton, tied to a chair under a huge heap of furniture that was in the cabin. Cause they didn't use the cabin like regularly, but they had a sneaky little suspicion that this could potentially be Mark. And it was Mark. So he was discovered January 10th, 1993, but they actually believe he was killed October. He was actually killed in October of 1992. And I lied. He was killed in October of 1993, but he was discovered in January 10th of 1994. So again, he had gone missing anyways, but so did Glenn. And nobody knows where they actually had a suspicion that Glenn had something to do with it and they couldn't find him in this area anyway. So this would have been in Ohio. The Ohio police or the Hamilton, Ohio police were kind of like, something's not right, but we don't know where he is. So I guess good riddance. Okay, cool. Then he goes on. So in 1995, he's 33 years old. He ends up in Los Angeles, California. He meets up with a woman by the name of Sandra Gallagher. She's 31. They met in a bar on September 28th, 1995. And again, he was like a looker. That's why he's considered the Casanova killer, because he would go into the bars and he'd meet these people and they all thought he was super nice and super cute. So he ends up talking to her all night. And the next day, somebody sees a car that is like burning. So they call the cops and they find a body inside of this car. The car is registered to Sandra Gallagher. They find out that it's Sandra Gallagher and she has been strangled in her car. And so they do a little digging and a little bit of research, and they start asking questions. People start describing who they saw Sandra with. And they said they didn't know who he was, but she kept saying the name Glenn. And so they ended up somehow, some way, I think they went into like databases or something, similar crimes. I don't know, but somehow they got a picture of Glenn somehow, and they showed it to the bartender, and the bartender was like, oh yeah, that's the guy. And they said, cool, let's go find him. So they went to his apartment and he was gone. So, gone.
And he's not going to kill and stay around.
Apparently not.
He went all the way from Ohio to California. So
he did.
He's used to moving around.
And he continues, actually. So he ends up after that, he ends up in Mississippi. So he goes from LA to Mississippi. He meets a woman, Linda Price, again in a bar. I don't know the date they actually met, but what I do know is, again, September 28th is when he killed Sandra Gallagher. And he ends up in Mississippi, and he literally meets this lady and moves into her apartment. And her family members and friends had said, like, she was talking about how she was dating this guy and he was, you know, going to live in the apartment with her for a little bit. And everybody was kind of like, we've never even heard of this dude.
And they didn't have internet dating. They didn't have, you know, Tinder or anything like that. So,
yeah, no, he definitely, I mean, I think he knew what he, I mean, he knew what he was doing. And these girls, like I said, he was a smooth talker. So he, lived with her. Lived with her for about a month, because they end up finding her body in a bathtub on October 30th, 1995. And in their apartment that he shared with her. So now at this point, I feel like they're still not all connecting the dots, because again, Ohio's not really talking to Los Angeles. Los Angeles is not talking to Mississippi. So he's murdering in these states, but they're not all sharing information. But what they do know is that she was dating a guy named Glenn Rogers, who had actually met like two or three of her family members. So they were able to give a description. So they kind of have an idea who he is. And so now they're looking for him. And of course, they don't find him. So then he moves on to Tampa, Florida. So now he's gone from Ohio to LA to Mississippi to Tampa. And he meets Tina Cribbs, who's 34. They met in a bar on November 5th, 1995. So this is literally 6 days after they found Linda's body. So 6 days later, he made it to Tampa and has already met somebody else. He asks her if she could give him a ride, because he doesn't have a ride, even though he has a car. How'd he get there? So anyways, he asks for a ride. He actually ends up going to a motel with her. And 2 days later, so November 7th, they find the body of Tina Marie Cribbs stabbed in the butt and the chest in the motel. And the thing that's weird about, not weird, but interesting about this is he checked into the hotel with the Tina girl. And so his face is like in everybody's brain there. The motel clerk said, oh yeah, they were such a sweet couple. And then she said that they paid for one night, and then he came in the next day and said, I'd like to pay for one more night. And they said, that's fine. But then like halfway through the day, he was packing up the car to leave. And she even popped her head out, the motel clerk, and was like, hey, I thought you were paying for an extra day. And he's like, no, I am. It's fine. Packs up his car and takes off, because she's dead in the motel. And so they end up going, the next morning is when they go in there to like clean out the room, and they find her.
Yeah, he's getting sloppy because he hasn't been caught yet.
Totally sloppy, because then she's able to give like a full ass description of what he looks like, which then at some point they have to connect the dots that this is the same guy. And for all I know, they didn't say, but it's 95. They probably had camera, like at least maybe some cameras in the motel, like lobby. And again, he's in there. And so now they know, okay, so now this is another person. And so then off he goes. They can't find him. They look, they don't know where he is. He ends up being in Bossier City in Louisiana. So now he's gone from Ohio to California to Mississippi to Florida to Louisiana.
Heading back west.
Maybe. I don't know. He meets Andy Giles Sutton. She is 37 years old. Again, met in a bar. They don't really talk much about it. My guess would be they met in a bar, went home together. Maybe he asked her for a ride, same as before. But her body was found on November 9th. So 4 days later. and she was in her bed with multiple slash wounds. Now,
he seems to get more angrier and angrier with every single one of them.
Right, because the first just girl...
keeps escalating.
Right, because the roommate... the man, the only man in this situation, was tied to a chair. So that would lead me to believe that he was either tortured or just left there to die. And that was it. And then the girl, the first girl, Sandra Gallagher, was strangled. Second woman. They don't say how she was killed. I'm assuming stabbing, though, because she was found in a bathtub. Third woman, stabbed multiple times. Fourth woman, stabbed multiple times. And again, his timing is shorter because it's like he goes from September 28th. Well, January, I guess, is when they discovered Mark Peters. So he goes from January of 93 and apparently doesn't kill anybody until September 28th of 1995. So like 2 years, two, almost 3 years. And then he goes from September 28th to October 30th, so a little less than a month, to November 5th, so 6 days later, to November 9th, 4 days later. It's like you can see like an escalation.
Yep,
for real.
For sure.
Okay, so this brings us to how he was captured. So because again, like you had said, he hadn't been caught and he was like freely not trying to hide who he was. He was not trying to...
wasn't changing his appearance.
Nothing.
Same long blonde hair, yep. Beard, hairy yep. Chest.
Same MO, meeting women at bars and then just killing them and just moving to a new state. So he was in Kentucky, November 13th. So this is now 4 days later, 4 days after they found Andy Sutton's body. He's driving through Kentucky and... You know, like when you're driving and like the, you know, state police like pulling behind you and they run your license plate just because that's just what they do. So they did that. And they found that this dude was driving a car that was registered to a Tina Marie Cribbs who had actually just recently been found dead. So immediately they're like, hold on. Nobody should be driving her car. And so they start... in a high-speed chase. And I'm laughing because just it's like movie. It's like a movie. It's like a movie. So they're chasing him. They cannot get him to slow down. They cannot get him to pull over. So a bunch of the police officers go ahead and they create like a barrier and he breaks through the barrier. They actually I think they threw out like spikes. He broke through the spikes. So again, they keep like racing ahead of him. And like one of the guys, he's like one of the police officers was very pissed. So he just gets out of his car and he just takes his shotgun and he shoots out the back tire. And it does not stop him. He just keeps going. And then another cop pulls up and is chasing him and ends up actually pit maneuvering him.
Love that maneuver. It's one of my favorites.
And I don't know what kind of a car it was because I honestly was laughing when I was reading it, so I forgot. But it was like a Mazda, it was like a hatchback, I think. So and it was like a smaller car. So if you can just imagine a pit maneuvered small car, like that's kind of fun. Anyways, so they pit maneuver him, And they you know, rush the car. And actually, there are videos of this because since it was a high-speed chase, the news, the local news stations were all over it. So when he got pit maneuvered, they actually have video of him in this high-speed chase. And when they pit maneuvered him, didn't flip the car or anything. So the car like veers off this side of the road. And they go up to the car to go get him out. And he is just, I mean, he is fighting to like not get out of the car, nothing. They finally get him out. They arrest him. They take him in for questioning. And he says, "What? Well, I don't even understand what's going on. Like, I was just borrowing the car from her." So, you know, that was not true. And they already knew at that point, based off of the fact that it was Tina's car, and the fact that they saw who it was, like they looked at his face when they picked him up out of the car. And they knew that he was already suspected in multiple murders. Because at this point, I think they knew that they had some type of serial killer on their hand because it was the same type of thing and the same description. So they had obviously somehow been sharing this information. So he was obviously arrested and charged immediately. There wasn't really much they had to do.
So he was caught in a 1993 Ford Festiva.
Okay.
Which is pretty impressive. Has a horsepower of 63. So to run for that long, I mean, it gets really good gas mileage, but to run for that long and you know, put the cops on a high-speed chase where they're shooting tires and trying to pit maneuver him, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he definitely. Anyways, so here's some idiotic shit that he pulled while he was in questioning before they were able to do any sort of trial or anything. So first off, he claimed to have murdered 70 people. Okay, so immediately they're like, "Holy shit, 70 people. Okay, can you give us names? Can you tell us where?" And then they went back to him. They said, "Okay, give us names, you know, whatever." And he goes, "Oh, no. Oh, God, I was joking. I would never kill 70 people, much less anybody. I've never even murdered anybody. I haven't killed anybody." So it was like, cool. This is the one that's really bizarre. He claimed that he murdered Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. And if you don't know who that is O.J. Simpson's ex-wife and the man that she was with that was killed. So he was saying that he was paid by O.J. Simpson to rob her because she had a pair of earrings that he was looking for, and he wanted to get them back. So he apparently paid Glenn a hefty amount to rob her house and get the earrings. But see, when that happened, things got out of hand and he had to kill him. So he supposedly killed her first, and then supposedly Ron Goldman showed up and he killed him. Then of course, they're kind of like, "What the? Okay." Then later he said, no, I'm kidding. I didn't kill them. Actually, what happened is that I stalked her because he had been hired by Nicole Simpson to paint his house because at that time he had an alias and he was pretending to be a painter. And apparently she had hired him to paint her house. And so that's how the whole Nicole Simpson thing came into the idea. But he said, "Nope, I didn't kill them. But what I did do is I stalked her because I liked to watch her. And I was actually stalking her the night that OJ killed them. And I actually have video proof that he killed them." And so they're like, "Where's the proof? Where's the video?" And he's like, I don't have one, but I have one."
Sounds like me. He's setting up a defense for insanity. Continuing to say stuff, going back on it, back and forth, just decrediting himself, basically.
I feel like he's an attention grabber And yeah, I feel absolutely. Like, I mean, just based off of the way that he would find his victims and how he'd use his charm and his looks and all, I feel like he was literally doing it to fuck with the detectives, to kind of maybe make it seem like he's either worse than he is, like scarier than he is, or maybe to try to make them get so distracted with like the O.J. Simpson stuff, because by this time, O.J. Simpson had already been charged with the murder. And I think... I think the O.J. Simpson trial had already concluded as well. I think by this time, they had already done the O.J. Simpson trial. He had already been found not guilty, but everybody who was in the law enforcement there felt like he was guilty. So they had zero reasons to like even look into it.
Yeah, this was definitely after, because it was October 3rd, 1995 was the trial date for O.J. Simpson.
Okay, and this is, yeah, because this was in November. So this is...
So it was in the news. It was all over the place. So he's just picking up on it, trying to postpone.
Yep, because he's a lying
piece of
shit.
Sending them on wild goose chases. Yeah.
So he was charged. And again, I don't understand. Let me be very clear. And I don't understand how it is that he killed five people. Like, for sure, five people. But yet he was only charged with two. And I don't know why that is. I don't understand our laws, because I don't know why you wouldn't just charge with all five, but whatever. So on July 11th, 1997, he was actually convicted of killing Tina Cribbs and sentenced to death. And then July 22nd, 1999, 2 years later, he was convicted of killing Sandra Gallagher and sentenced again to death. So he was convicted of the Los Angeles murder and convicted of the Tampa, Florida murder. But that's it. Those are the only two he was ever convicted
of. That might be the where they have the most evidence, and maybe in the states that have the death penalty.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I know reason. Sometimes it's like, instead of wasting their time convicting him or trying to convict him of all of them, they pick the ones that like have the death penalty. I don't know. Right now, current day, he is still sitting on death row, and he actually has no execution date set. He is housed at the Union Correctional Institute in Florida. And the thing about this that is annoying is that he was actually set, his execution date was actually set for Valentine's Day of 1999. So that's when he was actually supposed to be executed. But because we have this system in place that you can file appeals. That's what he's been doing. So he filed a bunch of appeals, and the most recent appeal he had, I think, was his 11th appeal that he had. And this was in, I think it was 2011 or maybe 2012, and it was denied. All of his appeals have been denied. But apparently it was the last one they would allow him to have, which I didn't know they could do that. I didn't know that they had a limit of appeals. But my question is, so why is he not dead? We're talking like 12 years later. Why is he still living in the Union Correctional Institute in Florida? And why does he not have an execution date if his appeal was denied? So that's pretty terrible. So yeah, that is the story of Glenn Rogers. It's a little bit of a crazy one because he traveled a lot to kill these people. And then his capture, like I said, I watched the video of it, and it's actually hilarious to watch. And I'm mad that he's still alive because he got the death penalty, but I'm mad that he had the ability to appeal so many times, and then he was told he can't appeal anymore like 12 years ago, and yet he's still alive. He's still on death row, which means our taxes are paying for him to live there. Well, mine aren't because I don't live in Florida, but Florida taxes are paying for him to be there. And he's like, he got captured in 95. So we're talking like, I can't do math.
29 years.
29, I was going to say 30. 29 years he's been sitting there, and he was 35, 33. in 95. So this guy is like almost damn near, what, 62 years old?
Yep.
Like at this point, it's like, what's the point, right? Like this guy has basically been able to live out the best years of his life in jail. And it's annoying because it's like in 2011 or 12, when his last appeal was given a no, then his execution date should have been set for the future, close to the future. And it's not. And there's nothing. And it's like, it makes me want to go to the people in Florida and be like, what's the holdup? So that is the story on Glenn. And I do want to tell you some of my final thoughts on Glenn. So first of all, I think that his story is a really good proof of my saying that we don't use mental health as an excuse for bad behavior, because his childhood was horrific. It was a nightmare, and I will not discount that he grew up in an awful environment. However, so did six other children, and those six other children did not turn into serial killers. They did have some issues, obviously, but they did not turn into serial killers. So you cannot use the excuse that he was abused as an excuse to excuse the behavior of killing people.
I mean, it's part of the reason why he became the way he was.
It's an explanation.
But isn't an excuse for the behavior he was doing.
And for anyone who's listening, I'm not heartless. But what I mean by we don't use mental health as an excuse for bad behavior is, no matter what your upbringing was, when you are one of seven children and you turned out to be a serial killer, you cannot say, I kill people because I was treated poorly. And you can say that may have led or, you know, brought you to that, but you can't look at people and go, I should not be in trouble for this because I grew up in a shitty household. Growing up in a shitty household sucks, but when you do bad things, you have consequences. It doesn't matter. You have a consequence. And we live in a society now where consequences don't exist as much. And so my family has grown up with me saying, it's just not an excuse. If you do something bad, you're going to have a consequence. Your consequence will fit your crime, however you do it. So that's that. I think he was a shitty person with a really shitty upbringing. And I will tell you that remember how I said he was admitted for the injecting Budweiser into his veins and he had to go through a mental thing. So at the Fort Hamilton Hughes Memorial Hospital, the comments that they made on his mental condition was, Glenn is a mentally ill person subject to hospitalization by court order. He represents a risk of physical harm to himself as manifested by evidence of threats or attempts of suicide. So my frustration with that is they had an order that they could have court ordered him to be put into a mental institute and chose not to. And they had the ability and they chose not to.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to us. We really appreciate you for that. And we've got a doozy for our next episode. Donald Gaskins, supposed to be known as the meanest man in America.
He's got a lot of nicknames, but he's, yeah. That's he, yeah.
So we look forward to bringing that to you. Hopefully you'll tune in and share that information with us and hear the story, and we will be ready for next week.
Okay, bye.